Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Tonight, the major escalation in the Mar-a-Lago documents investigation, with the DOJ asking a judge to hold Team Trump in contempt of court. Then, after almost 300 days in Russian custody, Brittany Griner finally on her way home. How the deal came together and what's next for other Americans still imprisoned there. And the historic day on Capitol Hill, with the House passing the Respect for Marriage Act. The congressman who presided over today's debate is here as the 11th hour gets underway on this busy Thursday night. Good evening, I'm Alicia Menendez in for Stephanie Ruhle. And we begin with two significant stories tonight. WNBA star Brittany Griner is now just hours from landing in San Antonio, Texas, after being imprisoned for nearly 10 months in Russia. The White House secured her release as part of a prisoner swap with a notorious Russian arms dealer. We're going to have much more on her release just ahead. We're also following a major development in one of the Justice Department's high-profile investigations into Donald Trump. A new report from the Washington Post says prosecutors have asked a judge to, quote, hold Trump's office in contempt of court for failing to fully comply with a May subpoena to return all classified documents in his possession. On Wednesday, we learned the former president's lawyers recently discovered two more documents with classified markings among Trump's items. Those records were found in a storage unit not far from Mar-a-Lago. Meanwhile, Special Master Raymond Deary's review of the material seized from Trump's Florida club is officially over. Appeals court shut down that review today after Trump declined to challenge its earlier ruling on the matter. Now DOJ's prosecutors can get to work sifting through evidence that before today was off limits. And in yet another case involving Donald Trump, one of his allies spent the day in an Atlanta courtroom testifying under oath. A source tells NBC News that former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn appeared before the grand jury investigating whether Trump tried to interfere with the 2020 election in Georgia. And as we follow those developments, a cornucopia, if you will, we're also keeping a close eye on Brittany Griner's long-awaited return home after her release today from prison in Russia. NBC News Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Andrea Mitchell has more on that story.
Do you know where I'm heading to?
No.
No?
No.
No.
Вылетите домой.
You fly back home.
She's safe. She's on a plane. She's on her way home. After months of being unjustly detained in Russia, held under intolerable circumstances, Brittany will soon be back in the arms of her loved ones, and she should have been there all along.
President Biden, alongside Griner's wife, Sherelle, after both talked to Brittany from the Oval Office.
And so today I'm just standing here, overwhelmed with emotions, but the most important emotion that I have right now is just sincere gratitude for President Biden and his entire administration.
Griner was exchanged on the tarmac in the United Arab Emirates for notorious Russian arms dealer Viktor Boot. Boot also seen on state TV flying back to Russia. He says, they took me right out of my cell. Widely known as the Merchant of Death, he had served 11 years of a 25-year sentence in the U.S., but left behind another American the U.S. says is wrongfully detained in Russia, businessman and former Marine Paul Whelan, who's already served 4 years of a 16-year sentence, charged with spying, which the U.S. strongly denies.
With that, let's welcome our leadoff panel, Peter Baker, chief White House correspondent for The New York Times. He spent years as the Moscow bureau chief for The Washington Post, closely watching the rise of Putin. Jackie Alemani, congressional investigations reporter for The Washington Post. She is also an MSNBC contributor. And former U.S. attorney Joyce Vance, who spent 25 years as a federal prosecutor. She's also a law professor at the University of Alabama. It is good to see you all. Jackie, I'm going to start with you because you are on the byline here. DOJ pressing for a contempt ruling from a judge. Why are they escalating to this level?
Yeah, this contempt hearing is happening tomorrow, and this comes after a breakdown, which I think is a bit of an understatement of trust between the Justice Department and the Trump legal team. The Justice Department complaining to the court that Trump's legal team has failed time and time again to comply with the original May grand jury subpoena. The Trump legal team, on the other hand, though, argues that they have complied, and in the latest bout of showing their compliance, they hired an outside team that recently searched Bedminster, Trump Tower, and a storage facility in Mar-a-Lago, where they actually recovered two items that had classified markings on it and returned it to the FBI. But there is an area of key disagreement here that goes beyond these continued searches, which is the fact that these attestations or these certifications from the Trump legal team to the court that they have completed a search and that to their the best of their knowledge, they haven't been able to find any additional documents with classified markings. They have not designated a custodian of these records, someone that would sign the document, a specific person attesting that all classified materials have been returned to the federal government, while the Justice Department has repeatedly sought this unequivocal sworn written assurance from Trump's team that all documents have been returned. So we'll see what happens tomorrow and whether or not this threat of contempt actually comes into play.
Yeah, Joyce, it strikes me that Jackie called it a breakdown of trust. Talk to me about that, why it matters, and what it would mean for Trump's team to be in contempt. What would actually happen there?
Right. So because this would be, in essence, a corporate sort of a contempt, this would involve a fine that would be imposed. And judges typically calibrate these sorts of fines in a way that are meaningful. They can escalate over time. And the intent is to achieve compliance with the original order or the original legal document. But what's so unusual here is that the lawyers are usually the adults in the room, the professionals. And even in very hard-fought litigation, the lawyers for a plaintiff and the lawyers for a defendant in a criminal setting, lawyers for the government and lawyers for a defendant, are usually able to trust each other, to get along, to have a back and forth that moves the case forward. So it's extremely unusual to see this sort of distrust. You know, the original subpoena that was delivered to the Trump folks called for the return of all documents, all government materials, not simply materials that were located at Mar-a-Lago. So the fact that items are still being discovered this far down the road suggests that the government has good reason to be distrustful, and it will be up to the judge to fashion the remedy in this situation.
And Joyce, does it tell you anything about where prosecutors are in this investigation?
Right. So one question a lot of people have asked is, why doesn't the government just execute search warrants every place to recover anything that's still out there in the wild? And the problem is that in order to get a search warrant, you have to have probable cause to believe that evidence or fruits of a crime will be found in a specific location. The Fourth Amendment requires particularity in the government's evidence, and the government has to go to a magistrate judge and say, we've got this good faith belief. So the idea, the concern that there are documents that are still out there isn't enough. Because classified documents, even when you go out and you print out a secondary copy, everything is marked, it's very likely the government knows what Trump had in its possession that hasn't been turned over, but that alone isn't enough for a warrant. They have to have some idea of where they might find those items. So they're left with this contempt action. Part of this is what lawyers in technical language might call a replevin, a request for return of property that's the government's property back into the government's hands. They're not quite at the level yet to get a search warrant, although one suspects that they are looking to get there.
Well, Peter, to that point, federal investigators, as both of our guests have said, seem to suspect there are other documents in Trump's possession that haven't been turned over. Do you think we're going to hear about even more documents turning up?
Look, the record of this has been pretty clear so far. Every time that they had some sort of an assurance that the documents had been turned over, there were more to be found. That's why they had the original search of Mar-a-Lago to begin with. And they showed, in fact, that there were documents there, even though they had had a signed statement back in June saying everything had been turned over. So the record suggests that they have reason for suspicion. As Joyce says, they may not know specifically where to find additional documents, but they clearly, as Jackie said, don't have any trust, not just in the former president, but obviously even in his lawyers.
Right. Joyce, here's 1-6 committee chair Benny Thompson earlier today. Take a listen.
We'll meet 1 p.m. Sunday to look at the subcommittee's report, and then we'll go from there.
Do you expect—
with the expectation of being able to present the final report with the 21st of December as the—
do you expect
that point?
Do you expect to make a decision about who would be on the list of criminal referrals at this Sunday meeting?
That's the plan. Yes.
Joyce, your take on how important these referrals are. We know they're not binding, so then what do they really mean?
Right. So the Justice Department typically insulates itself from these outside recommendations or requests. This case might be a little bit unusual, though, because the committee has played such an important role in surfacing evidence, surfacing information, and really making it incumbent upon DOJ to move forward in this case. It's likely that in addition to substantive sorts of recommendations about the conduct that led to January 6th and the entirety of the big lie, that the committee may also refer people who they believe were involved in obstructing the committee's work. That seems likely that we might see something along those lines. So whether these will be broad and expansive recommendations or whether they'll be very limited and targeted seems to be something that the committee is still engaging in back and forth on. But ultimately, DOJ, you know, has done something that a lot of people didn't believe that they would do. There's been this appointment of a special counsel who has hit the ground running. There's indication that he's looking at January 6th as well as Mar-a-Lago. So perhaps DOJ will be even further ahead than Congress expects them to be.
So, Jackie, looking ahead to this meeting they're going to have on Sunday, your sense, your reporting on how members of the committee are approaching these referrals?
Yeah, well, I think that there is a feeling that too many referrals could dilute the power of a set of more targeted and powerful referrals. There are people who have been mentioned by lawmakers over the course of really the past year and a half who they've said privately and publicly that they've believed that some of these people have very openly committed crimes and engaged in criminal activity. And a lot of that language has previously pulled from Judge David Carter's ruling, which actually said that it was very likely that the former president, along with John Eastman, had engaged in criminal conduct to defraud the American people and obstruct Congress by trying to halt the counting of the electoral vote. So what I'm really curious to see is, you know, if there are any unexpected criminal referrals that come out of this. We do know that there is broad agreement that criminal referrals do need to happen and are likely to happen. And even though they are just symbolic, they are an important barometer and sort of a measure of the committee's impact. And they want to apply as much public pressure on the Department of Justice as possible to move forward with potential prosecutions and indictments. But it seems like it's still pretty much a toss-up on who those individuals exactly outside of the former president are going to be.
Peter, turning to our other big story tonight, you've reported from Russia, spent years covering Putin, the Kremlin. Why was it so important, so personal for Putin to secure the release of Viktor Butin?
Well, for him right now, this is a small bit of good news in an otherwise patch of nothing but dismal news, right? They have been suffering badly on the battlefield in Ukraine. Ukrainians, even in the last few days, have managed to use drones to strike military bases inside Russian territory. And instead of focusing on that, he would like Russians to focus on the idea that he has brought home this Russian patriot, this strongman, this mujik, this hero, as far as they're concerned, who's been persecuted by the West for all these years, that he faced down, if you will, the American president by getting this figure of sort of epic proportions in exchange for a relatively minor drug case. And I think that you'll see on Russian television a lot of pumping up of this barter as an example of Putin's continued wherewithal, continued capacity on the international stage, even if in fact he's looking weaker and weaker given the results in the battlefield.
Peter Baker, I have about 90 seconds. So, of course, I'm going to ask you a question that would take more than 90 seconds to answer, which is how this prison exchange impacts U.S.-Russia relations, especially with the ongoing war in Ukraine.
Yeah, it's odd, obviously, of course, to be able to negotiate a narrow targeted deal like this in the middle of a war in which we are essentially through proxies fighting with the Russians. We're giving arms to the Ukrainians. And yet it shows that there is still potential for diplomacy. And the real question going forward is, can they make it work again with Paul Whelan, whose case, of course, is very much high on the list of American officials and, of course, his family, who has been missing him for 4 years. He's been in prison since 2018 in Russia and remains off the list. Putin refused to deal with him as part of this swap.
And that is part of the conversation that we're going to be having next. As always, Peter Baker, Jackie Alemani, Joyce Vance, thank you all so much for getting us started. Coming up, former Governor Bill Richardson helped secure Brittany Griner's release. I'm going to ask him about his hard work to bring her home and what's next in the battle to free other Americans held overseas. And later, a big day on Capitol Hill as the House passes same-sex marriage protections. Congressman Richie Torres is here to discuss today's historic vote, the 11th hour, just getting underway on a Thursday night.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit, credit to the people.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
This administration from the start has been really committed to seeing wrongful detainees come home from around the world, not just from Russia. But it doesn't give them the power just to make that happen. They can't just wave a magic wand, regardless of what level of commitment is here.
Brittany Griner will be home for the holidays with her family. The United States is still working to free other Russian prisoners, including former Marine Paul Whelan. Whelan's family was notified ahead of Griner's release. NBC News reports, quote, the Kremlin ultimately gave the White House the choice of either Griner or no one after different options were proposed. Let's discuss with former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, who runs an organization specifically focused on releasing U.S. prisoners in other countries. Was part of the effort to get Brittany Griner released. Governor, it is good to see you. I'm hoping you can draw back the curtain for us. What can you tell us about how we got here?
Well, you got to give the White House credit and the president's team, the National Security Council, that basically have been pushing very hard with combinations to get both Whelan and Griner with the options. But then in the end, I think it was Putin who didn't want to give the president a victory and decided that it was just going to be Griner. Now, this is unfortunate because I've been working on these cases like for Whelan for about 4 years in the Trump administration, proposing alternatives. Now, I'm not negotiating directly. I call myself a catalyst pushing both sides, meeting both sides, went to Russia twice, met with the embassy in Washington, met with White House officials who I think did a good job, especially John Finer at the National Security Council. But this is good news. She's going home to her parents. Very effective public media campaign by her attorney, her representative, her spouse, her father, the WNBA. So they should get some credit for this, too.
Absolutely. We're going to be talking with one of them in just a minute. You know, it is our sense, of course, that Russia is watching how this is received at home. To what degree and what is it that they are watching for?
Well, obviously, they know that Brittany Griner was an icon, a basketball star, an African-American woman with a huge following. So obviously, the Russians wanted to get something substantial in return. And they did with Victor Boot, who's a very bad guy. I know a lot of people are making excuses. He served 11 years, that he wasn't a security threat. No, he's a bad guy. But you have to make deals like this to get American hostages back, our military, innocent people, wrongfully detained like Paul Whelan. So, you know, this is the ugly side of diplomacy. But at the same time, the fact that this deal was made humanitarian, prison to prison, despite the terrible relationship we have with Russia right now, indicates I'm an optimist. I think we're going to get Paul Whelan out, and I think it'll be sooner than later. I've said by the end of this year, I took a gamble. We got Trevor Reed, a Marine, out about 4 months ago in an exchange with Russia. Now Brittany Griner. And then Whelan, and there's several others. Alicia, there's about three others we're working on, Americans that are detained in Russia, including a POW named Gerdy Kerbasi in the Russian occupied section of Ukraine. So, you know, the task, and I think the Whelan family have been remarkably resilient. They've been gracious, patient, but I feel for Paul. But I think the news soon will be good. I'm an optimist, and I think he'll be out.
Right. Back in October, early October, you didn't want to prognosticate, but you did say that you were cautiously optimistic that they would both be out by the end of this year. Where do the efforts then to bring Whelan home go from here?
Well, there's a channel that the White House has with the Russians that is a very official secretive channel. I don't want to get into deliberations on the multiple options that have been proposed, but I do think that it's going to be another prisoner exchange for Paul Whelan. The Russians are tough negotiators. They're not going to give him up for free. So we should expect a negotiation center on prisoner exchange individuals that the Russians want. Now, Putin looks good with his constituency in Russia because he got booed out. So and President Biden has done a good job, and it's worked out well to bring Brittany home. But we can't forget the Marine. We can't forget the military guy who's not as glamorous as Brittany. So we full speed ahead. The government and private groups like mine, we work together. But I don't work for the government. They don't tell me what to do. And so we're going to continue our efforts cooperating with our government that has done a good job. But at the same time, we work for the families, my foundation, the families of hostages. They're the ones that we respond to. So in the days ahead, we got to go full speed ahead and try to make that goal by the end of the year of have Paul Whelan and other Americans in Russia. But also, Alicia, there's some in Iran. There's four there. There's four in Venezuela. We've got about 60 around the world. We should bring all our hostages home, but it's going to cost. It's not going to be easy. But let's concentrate now on Whelan and see if we can bring him home to his family and to his country.
Former Governor Bill Richardson, thank you so much for making time for us tonight. Now I want to bring in Griner's teammate, Breonna Turner, a forward for the Phoenix Mercury. Breonna, you called this, quote, the best news to wake up to earlier today. How has the team reacted to the news?
I think we've all been really excited. Obviously, it's been a really long 294 days, but to wake up to the news this morning, I think everyone just breathed a deep breath and it was a huge sigh of relief.
You heard Governor Richardson there really lauding the effort that went into making sure that Brittany Griner's story did not fall out of the headlines, the work that was done by her wife, the work that was done by the WNBA. What can you tell us about the organizing effort within the WNBA to keep Brittany's story in the headlines and to bring her home?
No, definitely. It was efforts made from day one. There was a WeRBG hashtag. There was WeRBG.org to get all the latest information. There was t-shirts. There was campaigns on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all different social media platforms. So the main goal for us was to make sure that Brittany's name was not lost, that everyone still knew about her and knew that her case still mattered and that we weren't going to forget about her.
We're living in this, in the reality of watching her on that plane, of knowing that she is headed home. We believe she will land overnight, but that comes in the shadow of 10 months of life without her, of Brittany detained in Russia. What has that been like for you, for the team?
It's definitely been tough to navigate. Obviously, no one wants to be in this position. No one's prepared to be in this position. It's been a lot of confusion, a lot of uncertainty. But the news today, it kind of obviously settled everyone's nerves. And we're just happy to have her back home and just hopeful for her recovery process and be able to spend time with her wife and her family.
That is certainly, I am sure, where she is going to spend those first early days. When you do get to see her, I am sure that you have imagined this moment in your mind. What is it you want to say to her? What do you want to tell her about the time apart?
I'll honestly just probably speak to the future and how I'm just happy to have her here. I mean, if she wants to talk about her time there, we can talk about it, but obviously I'm not going to force her. But I'm really just looking forward to the future. I'm happy that she's home for the holidays, and I look forward to when I get to see her in the future.
A lens toward the future. Breonna Turner, thank you so much for joining us. Coming up, the congressman who presided over today's historic marriage equality vote on Capitol Hill is here. We'll talk about the progress that's been made and the fight that remains when the 11th hour continues.
On this vote, the yeas are 258, the nays are 169, present one. The motion is adopted.
It was a moment our next guest says he never imagined in his wildest dreams. The House today passed legislation to enshrine federal protections for marriages of same-sex couples and interracial marriages. A version of the bill was approved in the Senate late last month, so the Respect for Marriage Act is now headed to the president's desk. It is a historic achievement, one that only a decade ago, just a decade ago, was still considered unthinkable by both parties. New York Congressman Richie Torres joins me now. He presided over today's House debate. Congressman, I caught you watching the sound from Speaker Pelosi, a huge grin on your face. I am sure this is meaningful to you, not just as a member of Congress, but also personally. What did this moment mean to you?
It was one of the most empowering moments of my life. I mean, I grew up in the projects in the Bronx, living in fear of coming out, and I never thought that I would become a member of Congress and open and preside over the debate for the Respect for Marriage Act. For me, there's nothing more gratifying than affirming your own equality on the floor of the House of Representatives. So it was an empowering moment. We made history, and I couldn't be happier.
The context is important. You and I are about the same age, and this truly was just unthinkable in recent memory, right? And at the same time, you have 169 Republicans who voted against marriage equality. Several took to the floor to explain why. Take a listen.
God's perfect design is indeed marriage between one man and one woman for life. And it doesn't matter what you think or what I think, that's what the Bible says.
I hope and pray that my colleagues will find the courage to join me in opposing this misguided and this dangerous bill. And I yield back.
I don't take the decision to play that sound lightly, Congressman, but I play it because I think it is important to understand the counterforce here. You had to stand there, listen to those arguments. What is your response?
Well, as I was presiding, I had to remind my Republican colleagues that their time had expired, which to me has a deeper meaning.
Double entendre,
you know,
for
sure. I said during my speech, you know, we're not going to leave it to the forces of hate and the relics of the past to be the final word on the fate of love. The future of our democracy does not belong to bigotry. It belongs to LGBTQ inclusive democracy. and the Respect for Marriage Act is living proof. The fact that it did pass on a bipartisan basis in both the Senate and the House is a sign of how far we've come as a society. And the Republicans that you heard on the House floor in opposition are relics of the past.
How far we have come, and of course, I don't need to tell you how much more work there is still to be done. Mm-hmm. LGBTQ advocates, of course, worry this measure doesn't go far enough to protect marriage, to protect other fundamental rights. Your sense of what more Congress can do?
Well, the Respect for Marriage Act was the best bill that we could pass to survive the filibuster in the Senate, but it's monumental on its own terms. I mean, first, it repeals the Defense of Marriage Act, which to me is one of the most discriminatory pieces of legislation Congress has ever enacted. And second, it federally recognizes same-sex marriages. There are more than 1,000 laws providing benefits, rights, and privileges to married couples. And under the Respect for Marriage Act, same-sex couples would have equal access to those rights and privileges for the first time under federal law. And keep in mind, the Respect for Marriage Act did not arise in a vacuum. It came in response to the judicial activism of the Supreme Court. We are doing for the right to marriage what we should have done for the right to an abortion. We are enshrining it in federal law in order to protect it from the radicalism of the Supreme Court.
And yet, I am sure that you would like to see more.
But for me, the holy grail of LGBTQ equality is the Equality Act, which would protect the LGBTQ community from discrimination in areas beyond marriage, in housing and employment and public accommodations. So for me, that should be the ultimate goal of the LGBTQ civil rights movement.
It is not lost on me. I'm sure it is not lost on you. The moment in which this is all happening, right? You have hate against the LGBT community on the rise. I understand that in some regards that cannot be legislated. That is cultural. That is social. I do wonder what you believe lawmakers can do, what might be possible in this next Congress. I know what your holy grail is. I think you and I know that's not necessarily going to be something that is possible in the next years. What is possible to protect LGBTQ Americans from this growing threat? And does it happen in Congress or does it happen in state houses?
The fight for equality is waged at every level of government, a federal, state, and local. You know, even though we did pass the Respect for Marriage Act on a bipartisan basis, the truth is that most of the Republican Party has never been more radicalized against the LGBTQ community. We've seen the conservative movement, the Republican Party, wage a vicious campaign of scapegoating and fear-mongering, particularly against the trans community. We've seen bathroom bills, the Don't Say Gay law. And I believe that the words and consequences of the Republican Party has set off a wave of hate crimes against the LGBTQ community. Words have consequences, and those of us in elected office have an obligation to speak out forcefully against anti-LGBTQ bigotry coming from the conservative movement, coming from the Republican Party.
Congressman Richie Torres, thank you for taking the time to join us on what I know was a busy and important day.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to break down the politics surrounding this very busy news day with two of our favorite political insiders. The 11th Hour continues. As President Biden was chalking up another success today, the legal challenges for his potential opponent, well, they are only getting worse. This afternoon, the Justice Department reportedly asked a federal judge to hold the former president in contempt for his actions in the Mar-a-Lago documents case. Let's break it all down with Maria Teresa Kumar, the president and CEO of Voto Latino. She's also an MSNBC contributor. And Michael Steele, former chairman of the Republican National Committee, former lieutenant governor of Maryland. It is good to see you both. You know, Michael, a lot of Republicans reacted to Greiner's release with criticism. Here is what Senator Roger Marshall had to say. Take a listen.
Let's think about what we did here. We traded a basketball player for a known terrorist, a criminal. I hope Brittany realizes she lives in the greatest country in the world. The price of freedom isn't free. And I sure hope she'll stand for the national anthem now.
So pretty quick pivot there to culture wars. It used to be that people on both sides celebrated the freedom of an American citizen at a minimum. Now this just becomes another partisan talking point. You had former National Security Advisor John Bolton calling it not a swap, but a surrender. Your response to that, and what does it tell us about the moment we find ourselves in this Republican Party?
Do we really give a damn what they think about Brittany Griner's release? I mean, really, do we really care? Is it? It's not even news. You could write that script in your sleep, but just stick it in a post box somewhere and just let it go.
You're getting the producer fired tonight, Michael. Take it easy.
No, I don't mean it that way. I mean, you got to cover it, obviously. But I'm just saying, you know, from my side of the aisle, you sound so ridiculous. You sound so ridiculous. Where were you when Donald Trump negotiated the release of all those Talibans who were killing, Americans and fighting us in Afghanistan? Where the what was it, 5,000? I mean, come on, stop it. I mean, this is a moment of celebration. We have other Americans who are being held hostage in overseas around the globe. This hopefully is a door opening. You have the other gentleman, Mr. Whaling. You have others who clearly are right now in the crosshairs. And instead of sitting there and nitpicking at something stupid, you should be figuring how you can help the president get these people home.
Yeah, I mean, Maria, just sort of stay on the same point. And I think it is important for context because we know that Russia is watching, right? They're watching to see how this news is received at home. They're watching to see how members of both political parties, not to mention the American public, react to this. You have the former president calling the deal a stupid and unpatriotic embarrassment because Paul Whelan is still in Russia. But let us not forget, Whelan spent 2 years in custody during the Trump administration. That tells you everything you need to know.
Well, and this is the thing. Nothing tells us about American values on the world stage than comparing them with the Putin's values are. Here we are is that we brought in an American who did not have any connections to the president. Her only birthright was the fact that she was an American citizen. And my goodness, God bless any American that gets in trouble now abroad. Now you've juxtaposed that to what we did today with Putin. Putin wanted the Lord of War. He wanted to trade this individual who was an arms leader who caused chaos all over the world, including aiding and abetting some of the worst massacres that we know in Liberia. And that was who he wanted to trade. And that says what it means to be an American, why we are prevailing and making sure that democracy is still working. And the fact that the Republicans cannot side on American values, recognizing that you're absolutely right, Alicia, Putin is watching, but the reason he's watching is because he also recognizes that he has a failed war. He was trying to use Brittany Gardner as a political pawn when he was invading Ukraine, and he thought that that was going to be a quick way to show his power. And if anything, we actually saw him today cower and recognize that he is weakened. And no matter of what he's going to try to do with the Russian people, they recognize that the American values of democracy, that you don't have to be highly connected, that you can be an incredible athlete and your country will value you. And instead, what they got back in Russia is a war criminal.
Michael, this is obviously the big news of the day, but there was a lot of other news this week, specifically as it related to the former president. His company, guilty of tax fraud, his handpicked candidate loses in Georgia, now a possible contempt charge. What is interesting to me is that there are multiple paths to accountability that we have been following now for years. Which seems to you most promising?
All of them. I'm sorry. At this stage, all of them. But just look, this case right now, the decisions that have been coming down judicially against Trump and his lawyers, the Justice Department now asking for, basically sanctions, holding these guys in contempt for the way they approached and handled the case in Mar-a-Lago. You kind of get this sense that all those things are coming to that point, that apex, that moment. I think right now, with the very important decision about the Trump entity, the brand, the company, this week. Also, the other elements of the legal matters that are falling into place, the January 6th committee, now at least, indicating, we'll see what the final report says, hey, criminal referrals are coming your way to the Justice Department. You just kind of get the sense that people have gotten to the point where they realize, yeah, we've got the backbone to do this because the law requires it. Justice demands it. And the facts and the evidence in front of us make it very clear that the path we're on with respect to these legal issues is the correct one.
Maria, I've got about 60 seconds. Your final thoughts.
I think it's very simple, and I'm a little giddy with Michael on this. You know, the reality is starting to set in for Team Trump, and that is that he is no longer Teflon Trump. And we are going to see that not just the fact that he was found guilty by a jury of his peers, his organization was found guilty, that he lost with Herschel Walker, but also that he is failing in what he has tried to do, which is undermine our democracy. Again, he's no longer Teflon Trump. And I think that's a good thing. And that's almost a happy Merry Christmas to us by the end of a very difficult couple of years under him.
Maria Teresa Kumar, Michael Steele, thank you both for staying up late for us. Coming up, this is National Latina Pay Equity Day. And as one headline just put it, the disparity is worse than you might think. We're going to look for some solutions. The 11th Hour continues.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup Pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
The last thing before we go tonight, Latina Equal Pay Day. You might recall March 15th symbolizes the day of the year that women finally catch up to what men made the previous year. But today, December 8th, is when Latino workers finally earn what white, non-Hispanic men earned in 2021 alone. Do the math. That's almost an extra year of work to earn the same amount. The National Women's Law Center reports full-time Latino workers earn just 57 cents for every dollar the men make. And for part-time workers, it's just 54 cents. That is a 46-cent wage gap. It's nearly $1.2 million less over a 40-year career. So at this rate, a Latina has to work until she is nearly 90 years old to earn what a white, non-Hispanic man makes by the time he's 60. And sadly, thanks in part to the pandemic, these women are doing worse than they were before. Last year, Latina Equal Pay Day came nearly 2 months earlier, on October 21st. The Institute for Women's Policy Research has some suggestions for turning things around. They include offering living wages for the care and service sector jobs, typically filled by women, better access to higher paying jobs, support for unions, and a tougher fight against discrimination. Some in Congress are trying to do just that. Last year, New Mexico Congresswoman Teresa Legere Fernandez introduced the Latina Equal Pay Day resolution. And today, she and her fellow Latinas in Congress posted this.
We introduced the Latina Equal Pay Day resolution to bring to light that Latinas play a huge role in our economy. We do the work even as we are undervalued and underpaid. So what do mis hermanas say?
Latinas help build this country, and that work should be reflected in their paycheck.
Latinas are a critical component of America's workforce. Latinas deserve equal pay.
We clean, cook, and care for others. Latinas deserve equal pay.
We are some of the hardest working people in the workforce. Latinas deserve equal pay.
Latinas know we all deserve equal pay now. Ahora.
The hope, of course, is that we'll be marking Latina Equal Pay Day a whole lot earlier in the year. As President Biden tweeted just a few hours ago, equal pay makes all of us stronger. And on that note, I want to wish you a good night. I'm Alicia Menendez in for Stephanie Ruhle. From all of our colleagues across the networks of NBC News, thank you for staying up late. We'll see you tomorrow at the end of the day.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.